Welcome. This is the Clarity Fun Podcast. I'm Dr. Owen Anderson, and today we're going to talk about anxiety, specifically philosophy and anxiety. And that shouldn't sound like a strange topic to cover, because it falls under the heading of existentialism, or existential philosophy. Now, that term could be taken in a broad or a narrow sense, and what I mean by that is it could be narrowly referring to a school of philosophy, the existentialists. And that's mostly in the 20th century, the existentialists like Camus or Sartre, although there are precursors like Kierkegaard and Dostoevsky. But I'm thinking about it in a broader sense of existential application of what we do in philosophy to our lives and how we live. So existential problems that come up. And thinking about philosophy and anxiety, because a lot of people talk about anxiety. A lot of people wrestle with anxiety. And in fact, this could be called the age of anxiety. Now, in my book, The Natural Moral Law, I talked about this as a skeptical age. Not really an age of its own, but an age in between age. The skeptical age between ages. And what marks a skeptical age is that we've come to see problems in the solutions, the answers of previous ages. The confidence with which those answers were held has been undermined, and we see that we didn't really have knowledge. So the age of a skeptical age is good because it brings up challenges like that, which force us to reevaluate what we thought we knew. But it's not an end point. You don't want to end up in not knowing. You want to go on to know. And so that's the next step is okay, how do we come to know then? And especially what was brought up as challenges were about how we understood what is real and what is good. So we thought we understood reality. We had a certain way of framing it to ourselves and as a culture, and challenges have come up to say, well, we've come short of that. And that means what we value has also come short. Our understanding of what is valuable and what isn't valuable, how we framed our lives, how we organized our lives to attain certain goals, that's all been called into question. And that's precisely the anxiety I'm going to talk about in a minute, what's anxiety inducing. And because we thought we knew what was real, we thought we knew what was valuable, but challenges have brought up questions about that, we also come to see maybe we didn't know how to know things. Our whole approach to knowledge gets called into question. We thought we knew and we didn't know, which means that we had to rethink, well, how do I get this thing called knowledge then? Knowledge is different than an opinion. Because in knowledge, you not only have a true belief, opinions could be true, but in knowledge, what you have is a justification to show that indeed it is true. It's not just an opinion. And so we may have gone about that mostly relying on our senses or our intuitions, tradition, science, and those didn't get us to the knowledge we thought they would. So the skeptical age, one where we've come to see we don't know, and so I'm going to talk about anxiety as sort of the inner life of the skeptical age. The inner life of the skeptical age, and that's why it is also an age of anxiety from a different perspective. I'm going to distinguish anxiety from a couple other things. For example, fear. Fear has an object, whereas we'll see anxiety is a little more diffuse. It's less defined. Whereas fear has an object. Like, I'm scared of that tiger over there. Or I'm scared of death. Or I'm scared of public speaking. I'm scared of making podcasts. So you have something you're afraid of. So fear and anxiety in that sense are different. Anxiety is also different than worry. Again, in worry, you usually have something you're worried about and it has to do with the future. What if this happens in the future? Something uncomfortable, something I don't want to happen. What if this situation goes wrong in the future? What if I lose my job? What if I get sick? What if I have a car accident? I'm worried about these things, someone could say. And that's still different than what I'm going to mean by anxiety. Although, again, these words might be used interchangeably in our popular conversation. And I think anxiety is also, it's different than fear, different than worry, and different than stress. Anxiety and stress are often linked or used in the same way, but I'm going to talk about it differently. Anxiety and stress aren't the same. Stress is more like about a performance or a situation. I'm stressed because I have to give a talk at work and I don't feel prepared. Or, and you can see how that goes with worry, I might give the talk and I don't give the outcome I want. So what do I do? So stress has to do with an assessment of myself in this situation, and can I do what I need to do, and it's causing me stress. And someone could say it's causing me anxiety. They're using those words the same way. Whereas I'm still leaving out another definition for anxiety here. We haven't got to it yet, but I'm leaving that out to say that's different than fear, different than worry, different than stress. The age of anxiety, that's the inner life of skepticism. What happens with anxiety is that we have threats. So there, that's why you can see why it's like those other three. There is a threat. We have threats, and they're increasingly about our values. Our values are called into question. And those are the values, not just secondary level values or tertiary level values, but the primary values by which I understand myself. And the threat is not well defined in my mind. And it involves repression on my part. So I'm giving three stages here to the definition so far, and we'll talk about each one. What is repression? What are the threats? And that the threats are due to my identity. The threats are to my identity. And so the anxiety comes out as I'm not able to hold together my sense of self, and that's what the anxiety is. That's what causes the anxiety. So I hope you see how that's connected to the more objective skepticism, the outer life called skepticism, where we say, I don't know about these things, what is real, what is good. And because I don't know, my sense of self and the values that I consider to be myself are brought into question. And we don't know what to make of it. And that causes anxiety. We start to wrestle. So there is a threat. And for anxiety, the subjective side of the threat is more important than the objective side of the threat. So like what I mentioned with fear, you have fear of a public speech. That's an objective thing that you can think about and measure and consider how to do well on. Or worry. I'm worried about what happens if my car won't start tomorrow morning and I need to get to work. Or stress. I'm in this situation. My boss gave me a deadline. I don't know if I can meet it. I'm stressed. Those are sort of objective things. But here we get to the subjective side. And that's why we said anxiety is the inner life. The subjective side and the perception that my values and myself are threatened when they may not be. So we'll leave that open. But that doesn't matter, because the anxiety is still there, caused by the perception that challenges have come up to what I consider to be myself. Specifically, I've been using the word values, what I think is important in life. And ultimately, our values are aimed at what is called the good, our highest value, the good, that at which all other things are aimed. So existentially, the challenge comes in there. The challenge to the values, which then becomes a challenge to the self. So you can see how it's a challenge to my view of what is good and my view of what is real, specifically my view of what am I? What is the self? Now we can look at different examples of people wrestling with that. Kierkegaard goes over this in quite some detail. He's noted for his work on this, which is why he's called an existentialist philosopher. You can look at Richard III, who wrestles with this in one of his final soliloquies, wrestling with whether or not he can love himself. He's not been able to love anyone else. And as the play comes to an end, he comes to realize he can't love himself either. So he actually goes through that inner dialogue. I love Richard. No, I hate Richard. And why would I love Richard? Because of all of the awful things Richard has done. And so he has to come to terms with his values. There's a basic value, a basic sense in which you just love yourself. You are yourself. That's what Richard says. Richard is Richard. I am I. But then you begin to evaluate yourself, and you see that there's nothing there that's lovely. And then you have that anxiety. Now, Richard, interestingly, says this is due to the coward conscience. Oh, coward conscience, why dost thou afflict me so? And the very next day after he's had these thoughts, he wakes up and he tells his army to put aside conscience. So he assesses it that way, and there is an important consideration there, conscience. that which makes us reflect on our actions. And he calls it a coward conscience, because it can make us frozen in action. And the anxious person often is frozen in action, not able to act, not able to do something because they're anxious. Another Shakespearean example is Hamlet, who's frozen in that kind of action. He is wondering what happened to his father, if his uncle murdered Hamlet's father and then married Hamlet's mother. And he wants proof of this. And he looks for proof in different ways. There's supernatural proof, a ghost of his father tells him. There's evidential proof he looks for, and intuitional proof he looks for. But he still doesn't think he has the proof to act on what he thinks he knows. So he's frozen in that. And Hamlet as a character wrestles with his anxiety, even in his most well-known speech, to be or not to be. That's what he's wrestling with. Given the anxiety and the uncertainty of life, why continue to be? And his answer there is, because we don't know if it will be even worse next. So it continues that theme. I don't want to continue, but I also don't want to not continue because things could get even worse. And so I'm frozen. Uncertainty and anxiety. So the age of skepticism and the age of anxiety, the inner life of skepticism. And so we've said that there's a threat to the self, a threat to the values that hold the self together. Now, there was already a contradiction going into the self, which is being exposed by a challenge in life. There's a psychological disunity shown in inconsistencies of attitudes and contradictions in standards. And these could be in the individual or in the culture that breeds the individual. The individual makes those his own or her own, but they're standards of the culture which are contradictory and in conflict. And so that's what the age of skepticism brings out, to show those cultural contradictions, but they reside in the individual in this anxiety. Now, the opposite of disunity, of course, psychological disunity, is psychological unity, or being integral, integrated, integrity, whole. One. So you'll see psychologists, for example, Freud talks about that. The opposite of having mental problems is having being psychologically integrated into your environment. And that's the goal of the psychologist. So psychological disunity causes this. And the alternative is integrity, having consistency in our values and our understanding of the self. And that's what it would have to go back to. The solution then is to come to know, what is the self? I have a contradictory perception of the self, and therefore perceptions of conflict and challenge. Well, what really is the self then? And if I got that right, if I had the truth about it, then I wouldn't be susceptible to challenges that raise questions about if I'm in disunity or not, or if challenges are raised, I could answer them to show how I am. So what is the self? Let me give a quick example of what I mean. For starters, is the self something that had a beginning, or has it existed from eternity? And while that might sound at first puzzling, say, wow, that, why you bring that up? That's kind of deep. But that's where many different thinkers begin. Plato, for example, thought that the soul had existed from eternity. Genesis says, in the beginning, God created everything. So that would include soul. I don't mean to say that he created every human soul that day, but that all things besides God had a beginning. So those are some major differences right there about what is the nature of the soul. And then, so that's about the beginning. Then how about the other side? Does the soul continue after death? Are you just a body? You have no soul. So when your body is dead and decomposed, you're at the end of existence. And that sense of death is ultimately, the ultimate challenge or threat to the self. So what happens at death? Is the death the end of the self? Well, that is anxiety inducing. Now you might say, wait, I thought that would be more like worry or fear, as you've defined them here. Yes, both of those. You could fear death and worry about death and be stressed about death. But there's also anxiety, as we're defining it, that death raises for the sense of self, which is a kind of background anxiety someone could live with their whole life about death and not ever bring into their conscious mind. And that gets us to the third thing I brought up, repression. And someone might wonder, what is that? This sounds weird. This sounds Freudian. And yes, Freud did talk about that. He actually helped us. Even if I'm not a Freudian and don't know how much I would agree with other things Freud says, but he did bring up something which is helpful in this area. Now, we might have heard of it taught about as unconscious, the unconscious mind or repressed feelings. And he might mostly deal with that, the non-cognitive repression, the feeling of the self that the child has to repress to get approval from the parents. So the child might feel you can't be yourself around parent, or the parent won't like you, and I want to be liked, so I'll change myself. And then that creates a contradiction for the child. I am not this kind of person, but I act that way and become that way for approval. Which one am I? So that does raise that anxious anxiety about the self we're talking about. But I'd like to say that analysis so far is just at that non-cognitive level, which means not about beliefs. What also comes out that's helpful is the idea that we could have unconscious beliefs, and that might seem like a direct contradiction, because a belief is something that you believe, something you're conscious of, and that's right. But we could have also beliefs as implications and presuppositions of things we consciously believe. So an implication is kind of going forward. I believe A and B, therefore C is the implication. Presuppositions are going backward. Because I believe C, I'm presupposing A and B. And we're consciously aware, let's say, of my belief, C, but we're not consciously aware of its presuppositions. But the challenges that come up for us are challenges about those presuppositions. So that means that we could have anxiety, which is largely due to repressed, let's say, presuppositions, repressed beliefs. And so the very process of going through a challenge requires us either to live with the anxiety caused by the disunity brought to light by the challenge, and we can just live with it because we don't want to bring the repressed or presupposed beliefs into conscious focus, or don't live with it. Say, I'm not going to be disunited. What are my presuppositions about this? And bring them into focus and then relieve the tension that's there. And that would relieve the anxiety and also the skepticism. So notice you're dealing then both with anxiety and with skepticism. And the age of anxiety has changed. I can think about how what we call this the age of anxiety, how there are some ways in which that's unique to our age, because what I've described, someone could have always had to deal with. An ancient, a medieval, and a modern could always deal with the kind of things I've just mentioned. But if we say this is an age of anxiety or the age of anxiety, there are things that have made that to be the case, and people have been talking about that, especially since World War II and the development of the atomic bomb, the age of the atomic bomb and the age of anxiety, and the realization that you could destroy the whole world very quickly. Now, I read a quote from C.S. Lewis, who was writing about that, the nuclear age, saying, well, wait, we always had the possibility of dying suddenly. So the fact that we might be suddenly bombed, you know, it is one thing, but in the past they might be suddenly raided and their village destroyed by their enemies. So there's always been this chance that you could suddenly die. So nuclear age is not simply sudden death. The nuclear age is the destruction of humanity quickly and without a plausible purpose. I mean, not that there ever would be a purpose, but the idea is that you could just get a madman in charge of some bombs and everyone gets blown up. So the end of all of humanity, the end of the self, and the connection of the self to humanity, and then coupled with the world being in touch with each other, being able to communicate, and especially the way that's been accelerated with social media. And social media bringing to public interactions with people in settings we would never have interacted with before. And then that brings to the surface conflicts and those contradictions I mentioned earlier in society. So, for example, society would say, don't worry about what people think of you, and you're judged based on your likes or your views or your subscribers. So there's a contradiction. People want to be approved of on social media, but they also recognize they don't need approval of others, or they'll say at least, I don't need approval of others to justify myself. So which one is it? It can't be both. That's a cultural conflict coming out. And there's an anxiety there. But again, I think, and that's a big one, approval and competition. Because we're told both to not care about that, and our assessment of ourself depends on approval. This is another Shakespearean quote, comparisons are odious. Comparing each other to others and trying to either one-up someone else or put them down to get up ahead myself. And so in the societal evaluations, those are anxiety-inducing. But I think the one that's there, that's repressed, is this one about death. And it takes a great deal to bring that into focus, to consciously think about it. That's the ultimate threat to the self and the values of the self. In that sense, it's the ultimate challenge or the ultimate call to stop and think. No matter your station in life, your status in life, your successes, your failures, everyone dies. And that's just there. Now, it might feel far enough away you don't have to think about it, and that's the repression part. I don't have to deal with it yet. Or you might have gotten practical things in order or spiritual things in order. I don't have to think about it because of those. And that would be good. If you've gotten things in order, then you haven't repressed it. You've been thinking about it. But on the other side is the repression is not merely practical. It's what am I? Do I continue? Or is death the end? And all of these other things I've been stressed and worried about and fearing really pale in comparison to this threat. And so the age of anxiety, and incidentally, I think that's I read that, and I also heard a comedian talk about that people's number two fear is death. Their number one fear is public speaking. So they'd rather give a public speech at a funeral than they'd rather be in the casket at a funeral than give the public speech there. So the age of skepticism took away our certainties we had about who we are, what happens at death, where we go, so to speak, what to expect. Those are gone. And so our inner life has that background of anxiety due to the repression of consciously thinking about it and having answers that are knowledge, not merely answers, because you could get an answer by throwing a dart at a list of answers and pick the one it hits. Having the true answer that you can show is true about what happens to yourself and how that repression of death, thinking about death, causes this anxiety. And that repression is due to skepticism in the culture. So the ultimate contradiction in the culture is to say, don't think about death. You can't have knowledge of what happens to yourself. And then it says, the contradiction of that is, go about in life without worries, pursuing your goals, and don't worry about things. It'll be okay. But it won't be okay. I'm going to die. Yeah, don't think about that. But I have to if I'm going to do these things you're telling me to do and do them well. There's no purpose otherwise. And so you have these conflicts come out and again, be repressed if you think you can't know, or be dealt with and addressed. So we can apply this solution at the large level of death and at specific narrow levels, examples. Like someone might say, I also have anxiety about this event, or also have anxiety about my family relationship. I'm not dismissing those, but the same solution applies there. Identifying the conflict, seeing if there's been some repression of the problem, bringing those presuppositions into conscious focus, and resolving those to have unity in the self, integrity in the self, instead of disunity, psychological disunity in the self. So we can stop with that and think about that with death. What are we? What am I? When did I begin? When do I end? Maybe I don't have an end at all. I'm everlasting. What is the purpose of living in light of death? What values does death call into question for me? And how can I know? Is something eternal without beginning? Is God the creator real? Did God create us with a purpose that transcends death in the sense that it's the same purpose in this life and the next life? We can achieve that purpose now and forever because we're continuing on forever. And how can I know that? Not just have blind belief, or I would like that to be true. I hope it's true. It gives me some meaning if it is true. How can I get past those ifs to, I can confidently say I do know God the Creator is real and has created human nature, in doing that, given us a good, a purpose, a meaning. Those are some of the things we can think about as we wrestle through the age of anxiety and the need for solutions. Thanks for joining me.